You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO. I'm your host, Pastor Jonathan Fisk, and it is time, about time, for our daily lectionary study looking at the Gospel of Mark, rightly distinguishing law and gospel for you, making sure you know who Jesus is, what he's done, ready to give the good confession about your Lord. Today we're picking up Mark chapter 3, verses 1 to 19. We'll be looking at this text with Pastor Scott Kearns of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Kansas. He'll be speaking with Mr. Andy Bates just on the other side of this break while I'll do a little vacating myself. Even so, here we go. I'm going to read the text for you right now. Mark chapter 3, verses 1 to 19. Again, Jesus entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand. And they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come here." And he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm? To save life or to kill?" But they were silent. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart, and said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him. Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the sea, and a great crowd followed from Galilee and Judea, Jerusalem and Idumea, and from beyond the Jordan and from around Tyre and Sidon. When the great crowd heard all that he was doing, they came to him, and he told his disciples to have a boat ready for him because of the crowd, lest they crush him. For he had healed many, so that all who had diseases pressed around him to touch him. And whenever the unclean spirits saw him, they fell down before him and cried out, "You are the Son of God!" And he strictly ordered them not to make him known. And he went up on the mountain and called to him those whom he desired, and they came to him. And he appointed 12, whom he also named apostles, so that they might be with him, and he might send them out to preach and to have authority to cast out demons. He appointed the 12, Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, the brother of James, to whom he gave the name Boanerges, that is, sons of thunder, Andrew and Philip, and Bartholomew, and Matthew, and Thomas, and James, the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, and Simon the Cananean, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God for it. Man, do I love Mark. Tells a good story. More of this on the other side of this 8 o'clock break here on His Time, Worldwide KFUO. We are the messenger of good news.
Listening to His Time, I'm Andy Bates, sitting in for Pastor Jonathan Fisk this morning. It's time now for the Daily Lectionary. We're going to study Mark chapter 3 today, verses 1 through 19. Our guest, Pastor Scott Kearns of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Kansas. Pastor Kearns, welcome back to His Time.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you back. Yeah. Not too long ago, just on the air with us, with Pastor Fisk. Glad to have you back on the air. What's going on at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Kansas?
We got a Bible class, and we have Sunday school. We just started a Sunday school, so we're super excited about that. And so, you know, we know that the Lord is doing great things in our congregation. So,
Well, thanks be to God for you and for the saints who gather together to study God's word, to receive his good gifts there at St. Paul's. We are in Mark chapter 3 today, verses 1 through 19. Pastor, anything you'd like us to know as we prepare to dig into this text?
I think that the setting is maybe important, just as we're thinking about this. It's interesting. We often hear, I don't know, just, you know, Jesus was kind of doing his own thing out in, you know, the Galilee region and stuff like that. And we forget, I guess. And, you know, here in our text, it reminds us, and again, he entered the synagogue. So we're placing this in the sense of this has actually happened so many times that we don't really even know when exactly this happened, but we do know that this is kind of one of those things that Jesus did on a regular basis, in the sense of going to the synagogue. That was part, you know, temple life and synagogue worship were things that were done. And so for us here in this time, you know, going to church, I would say, is a direct comparison to that, and that Jesus actually was in church or in synagogue. So, and that some of these things happened, you know, as he, you know, entered or left the synagogue or in a temple or whatever. Those, you know, are the times that things happened. And so I think that's interesting to place the context there.
All right, Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 19. Let's take a look at the beginning of this. Let's take a look at this first paragraph, verses 1 through 6. Again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand. And they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come here." And he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?" But they were silent. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart, and said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him. So here we have, as you pointed out, he entered the synagogue. Jesus, where he should be, right? He's at synagogue. He entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand. And they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. What's going on here, Pastor?
Yeah, so it seems to, you know, as we're looking at this, it's almost, and they're pretty clear about this, and that it's almost like there's a trap that's been laid, right? That the Pharisees have kind of known that Jesus is you know, been healing. We have some other accounts of Jesus doing stuff like picking corn on the Sabbath or wheat. And so we have all of this kind of, you know, questions of doing work on the Sabbath and healing various people. And so the Pharisees are kind of like, okay, we know that he's going to kind of do this. So we're going to go to where he is. We're going to go to, you know, the Galilee region where he's performing his public ministry, and we're going to kind of lay a trap for him. And so that's kind of where we have it. And, you know, the other part of that is we have this man who's got a withered hand. Now, this is a hand that's withered. It's not the sense that, like, this was something that was born that way, that this actually happened as a result of, you know, it wasn't like a genetic thing, that it actually happened, you know, as a result of kind of an accident or you know, a malady, you know, that was happened in his life. And so we have this withered or in some ways dried up hand that's unable to move. It's like the often kind of think of the sinews that you know, in Ezekiel talks about, that those are not able to release or whatever. And so That's kind of the idea here, is that we have this man, and we have the Pharisees who are laying the trap for him.
And so he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come here." And he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?" But they were silent. So he says to this man with the withered hand, "Come here," and asks those standing around, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?" Quite a question.
Yeah, and it's interesting. And when we hear "come here," you know, we're thinking, oh, you know, he's just calling him over. But he's really actually doing a little bit more than that. He's kind of holding up this man as kind of like an example. He's, you know, putting this man kind of on a pedestal, if you will, and then asking the question, okay, is it lawful to do good or harm, to save life or to kill? And so he's really holding up this man who's got this thing and asking this tough question. And the practical application here is apparent. Like, okay, we know that you're holding up this man because of what's going to happen, and but who are we to say that it would be bad? And so they're all silent.
Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill? It's probably hard for us to relate to this today because we don't necessarily understand. We don't have that that ceremonial law of what you do on certain days of the week, particularly on the Sabbath.
Yeah, I think that that's really a strong thing because, you know, in a sense, the Pharisees have kind of, you could just kind of picture the way I think of it as kind of like the Pharisees have been careful to kind of craft this wall around the law. And then they're careful to kind of try to make this barrier for the people and for themselves from not breaking the law. And so they've gone so far as to say, you know, when it is that we should look and, you know, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, to what does that mean for a Pharisee is, you know, to remember the Sabbath day is to make sure that nothing, absolutely nothing, is, you know, above that or done, you know, to the exclusion of that. And so we will now make sure by doing absolutely nothing else, we're going to build a wall around this Sabbath, you know, rest, and so that nothing, absolutely nothing can be done. And so kind of that idea then becomes, you know, nothing, at least in Pharisee mind, or in the minds of the Pharisees, can be done. Nothing, unless it is Sabbath, you know, doing, you know, the things that go along with doing, you know, participating in the Sabbath, there should be nothing else done. And so, yeah, it's really a kind of a something we maybe can't wrap our minds around, but at the same time, you know, we see vestiges of it. You know, New York City. I mean, you hear about the guys who their sole job is to push the elevator button in order that Orthodox Jews would be able to go up and down the elevators because they feel so. As they consider that would be work on the Sabbath, and so there is some of that still going on. You can actually see that in our culture today. But the question is, you know, and Jesus asks, you know, is this lawful? Is it lawful to do good or harm on the Sabbath, to save life or to kill? And the answer that we all know and expect is that we should do good and save life on the Sabbath.
But they were silent, and he looked. They were silent, and he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart, and said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. He looked. They were silent, and he sees with anger there and grieved at their hardness of heart. So he heals the man.
Yeah, and that's really a tough. Word or phrase here in the Greek. I mean, this is this word, you know, being grieved here. Actually, it only in this form happens here in Mark chapter 3, verse 5, and that's it. And so it's somewhat of a hard kind of thing to wrap our minds around because we don't really have other places where this has some context, but here, as we look at this, you can just kind of feel the unsettlingness and really the Jesus kind of disappointment, if you will, in the Pharisees and their continued looking and rigidity at the law, standing in and against healing this man and their rejection ultimately of still him who comes. So we hear that and we see that here in this.
The Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him.
Yeah. So here we have the Herodians and they're here in chapter 3, and then finally in chapter 8, we have them come back again. And it's interesting that we don't really hear too much about the Herodians. A lot of times when we hear about, you know, the people kind of who are going against Jesus and all this stuff, we always hear Pharisees. But we know that this was another group of people. They were... Even as the Pharisees were trying to, look to the line of David, you know, here the Herodians are kind of looking, especially in Herod, and they were maybe not necessarily always on good terms, and yet here they kind of banded together in order to have counsel. Especially against Jesus. And we're going to find out when we get to 8 that there it is again, that they pop up in order to put Jesus to death. So, this is important.
Anything else up through verse 6, Pastor, before we move on to the crowd following Jesus?
I would just say, you know, it's interesting. So we have kind of this kind of standing of Jesus' miracle and, you know, the whole play of doing the Pharisees being against him. And then we kind of, it seems, switch to another kind of thing where we have verses 7 through 12, which kind of deal with the crowds. And then we're going to switch again to the 12 apostles. And so it is kind of hard for the reader, and I think for the pastor, and I think for all of us who struggle with this text, as we're going through and looking at all 1 through 19 to kind of pull in a common thread between them. And so one of the things I kind of look at is here, one of the things that stands out is whose will is it? Whose will is going to be performed? Whose will is going to be seen? And is it the will of God or the will of man? And so I think that we'll see that at play throughout the rest of these verses. And so I think that's the thread that connects them.
We're studying the Daily Lectionary with Pastor Scott Kearns of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Kansas. We need to take a break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue our study in Mark chapter 3. We'll pick up at verse 7. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO.
We have not yet made up our mind what we are going to do on the next broadcast of Law and Gospel, because for the second Sunday in Lent, there are some tremendous readings. The Old Testament about Abraham becoming a blessing to all, Romans 4, the great passage on Law and Gospel, and Nicodemus.
Weekday mornings beginning at 9:30 on KFUO.
Your smartphone takes you anywhere instantly. At a click, you can read, watch, and listen to just about anything. Some websites are good and some are bad. Some sites are truthful, but others are deceptive. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Hear the truth of Jesus daily on Worldwide KFUO. Using today's smartphone technology, KFUO brings the gospel to you where you are. KFUO is just a click away, 24 hours a day. KFUO.org.
Welcome back to His Time. I'm Andy Bates, sitting in for Pastor Jonathan Fisk. We are studying Mark chapter 3 this morning, verses 1 through 19. We're studying with Pastor Scott Kearns of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Kansas, picking up at verse 7. Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the sea, and a great crowd followed from Galilee and Judea and Jerusalem, Idumea, and from beyond the Jordan and from around Tyre and Sidon. When the great crowd heard all that he was doing, they came to him, and he told his disciples to have a boat ready for him because of the crowd, lest they crush him. For he had healed many, so that all who had diseases pressed around him to touch him. And whenever the unclean spirits saw him, they fell down before him and cried out, "You are the Son of God." And he strictly ordered them not to make him known. So Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the sea, and a great crowd followed him, and from all over. Pastor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's interesting. It doesn't really say this here, but I mean, we know from other accounts where Jesus withdraws, and sometimes it's kind of for varying reasons. So we have sometimes it's because things are developing and you know, he needs kind of a break. And there's also sometimes that he goes and withdraws, and I think that the case here, because he knows what, you know, that as the Pharisees and the Herodians are kind of plotting, you know, against him, that things are not looking good. And if he's sticking around in the region, they're going to figure out some way to try to trump up some charges or whatever. But if he kind of moves on, he'll kind of keep going in his public ministry until that time, ultimately, when, you know, he was to be brought before them and put on the cross. And so I think that here he withdraws to the with his disciples. We'll get to more of them later. And then to the sea and a great crowd following. And now we're seeing this whole spiel about the crowd. And so he's leaving from Galilee, and now we're going to the rest of the region, and we have people from all over.
When the great crowd heard all that he was doing, they came to him, and he told his disciples to have a boat ready for him because of the crowd, lest they crush him, for he had healed many, so that all who had diseases pressed around him to touch him. So he knew that this was a big crowd, and he may be crushed. And so he told his disciples, have a boat ready.
Yeah, and you hear this and you're like, well, what does this have to do with the guy with the withered hand? Is there some kind of connection there? And I would say that, yeah, when we hear this, we hear about this crowd, you know, it's their will. you know, their will become so strong that they actually, you know, it's all about the me, you know, heal me, you know, fix me, you know, cast out the demons in me. And it becomes so much so that who Jesus is kind of becomes secondary. In fact, there's a danger that he might be even crushed. And so, you know, we hear this, and I think the will becomes certainly stands over and against kind of what it is that's God's will for these people, which ultimately is that he might heal them and that we might have forgiveness that comes from him. And so I think here we have this whole kind of the picture of the crowds, and we find out that he's doing all kinds of stuff, and that he is, in fact, you know, healing them of their diseases, and that they press around so they might touch him, because we know, you know, the various times he's healed people because they've touched him in the faith. And so, you know, we kind of hear kind of a lump sum of all of these miracles that Jesus performs. And here we see kind of finally that there is a danger from the crowds, that they're looking to their own selves and their own best interests rather than even considering Christ.
And so whenever the unclean spirits saw him, when the great crowd heard all that he was doing, they came to him and he told them to have a boat. And then verse 11, whenever the unclean spirits saw him, they fell down before him and cried out, "You are the Son of God." And he strictly ordered them not to make him known. Verses 11 and 12. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is so interesting. You know, as we stand over and against these Pharisees who would not recognize who Jesus is, we have the spirits who are kind of right here. The spirits saw him, they fell down before him, and they cried out, "You are the Son of God." Even as the Pharisees would not confess who Jesus is, we have the very demonic spirits confessing truthfully, "You are the Son of God." Isn't that interesting that, you know, those people who claim to be, you know, the religious elite of the day are finally not to get it, but instead those who are possessed by demons, that those demons, those spirits finally confess truthfully, "You are the Son of God." And then finally, that last sentence, and he strictly ordered them not to make him known. Yeah, it's kind of, this is almost any time that something big happens, whether it be, you know, transfiguration or pretty much anything that we have, you know, Jesus healing, you know, man is blind by birth. I mean, you can go, the list goes on and on. Something happens, Jesus is going to charge everybody, you know, not to make him known, because ultimately we know that it's not yet his time to be made known, and that being made known ultimately leads to his death. So,
verse 13, and he went up on the mountain and called to him those whom he desired, and they came to him. And he appointed 12, whom he also named apostles, so that they might be with him, and he might send them out to preach and have authority to cast out demons. He appointed the 12, Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, the brother of James, to whom he gave the name Boanerges, that is, sons of thunder, Andrew and Philip and Bartholomew, and Matthew and Thomas and James, the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, and Simon the Zealot and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. So he went up on the mountain and called to him those whom he desired, and they came to him.
Yeah, isn't it interesting? I mean, we can go back to the mountain in the garden. We can go back to you know, the Mount Sinai, we can go, we can continually go Mount of the Temple. We have so many times where we're on a mountain. Here it is, something important. It's almost, you know, we have the mountain when Jesus is, you know, giving his sermon on the mount. You know, it's so many things are happening on a mountain, and ultimately that prefigure and are going in lines that pinnacle mountain of Calvary and Jesus on the cross. Here it is, another mountain scene, and we see him who calls the 12 and appoints them as apostles. It's just a one and a long line of succession that we have the 12 apostles who are being sent out, and we have kind of the mountaintop motif here in full display.
I find it interesting. He appointed 12. He appointed 12, whom he also named apostles, so that they might be with him and he might send them out to preach and have authority to cast out demons. 12 is mm-hmm. is 12 is kind of a common number in the scriptures. We see this from time to time in the scriptures. Would you say there's some significance to this?
Oh, I mean, yeah, there's so much here. You know, whether it be the fact that, you know, 12, if we take that and we realize that they're probably sent out two by two, that's, you know, six groups of two, or the fact that, you know, we have, you know, the 12 tribes of Israel, we have, you know, 12 just coming up time and time again. And, you know, here it is, 12 again, you know, and they have to say, you know, even those who are named the, you know, Judas who betrayed him, he are named, you know, as part of the 12. And so we kind of have this history of who they are, and that even as he betrayed him, they didn't like cross him out of the registry or whatever, and said, you know, that he was appointed as part of the 12 to go. And so we have the 12 who are ultimately sent out into the world and, you know, charged with that. Yeah, and this is standing, you know, in a sense that we know that there are other, you know, things. So we know that there are a whole host of other disciples, right? That these are kind of the 12 that have been kind of with him from the beginning, that these are the ones, you know, that are continuing in that. And so there's a whole host of other people, whole host of other, but here he appoints specifically 12 and names them. I think that's important, that this is absolute, in, you know, and we know, you know, how he brings those people about, you know, the fisher, those who are, you know, fishermen, and, you know, calling Simon, and we have all of this kind of things recorded. And so, yeah, this is important, you know, that he desires the 12 and that they come out and they might preach. And then there it is, have authority over the demons. It's kind of the office, if you will, that's being given, right? That those are to preach and have authority. You can just kind of hear that in your ears and think, oh, pastors who are being called, and they are being called to go out into the world.
And yeah, they're called, I find this interesting, verse 14 and 15, they might be with him. He might send them out to preach and have authority to cast out demons. That is some authority.
Yeah. I mean, and when Jesus talks about this, he talks about in the sense of, you know, being able to, you know, say the mountain you know, fall down. There is a distinct authority that is there, and that authority ultimately is the same authority that says to you, through the words of your pastor, you are forgiven. That authority to, you know, that was been given by Jesus to cast out demons is ultimately what casts those out of you, you know, by means of your pastor and through the waters of holy baptism, that you are made clean, that these things happen. That this isn't just something that is in a broad sense, that actually it happens, you know, on Sunday in church, that this, you know, that this is what ultimately it's all about. It's, you know, the preaching of God's word and the administration of his sacraments is what it's all about. For there is Christ.
He appointed the 12. Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, James, the son of Zebedee, John, the brother of James, to whom he gave the name Boanerges, that is, sons of thunder, Andrew and Philip, Bartholomew and Matthew and Thomas, and James, the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, and Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. Who are these men whom he appointed the 12?
Yeah, I mean, so we have, but in a broad sense, I think we have to just take a step back. They're sinners, you know, that here, you know, we learn, you know, who these are. Simon, as we read the scriptures, we find out that he's, you know, the one who's quick to say anything. You know, we have, you know, James and John, who are the brothers, the sons of thunder. You know, those are the ones, you know, as we look at, you know, Peter, James, and John, who are on the Mount of Transfiguration. You know, we have going through that, you know, we have Philip, Andrew, Bartholomew, you know, all of these people we have kind of realized are, you know, those who are called by Jesus. You know, they have been trained. You know, some of them we know better than others. I mean, certainly we know Peter and, you know, all of some of his exploits, because they're, you know, constantly before our eyes as we read the scriptures, you know. But as we think of, you know, Bartholomew, you know, we don't know too awful much about him, other than the fact that he is called by Jesus here and that he is part of the disciples or apostles who have been sent out. And so, you know, whoever they are, ultimately it comes down to that here they have been appointed by Jesus. He appoints the 12, and that they finally have authority to preach and to cast out demons.
Looking over the text as a whole, Pastor, just about a minute left. Anything else you'd like for us to learn from this text in Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 19?
Yeah, so ultimately it comes back, and I would say, as we're looking at this, whether it's the will of the Pharisees over and against the will of God, or the will of the crowds in and against the will of ultimately Jesus to heal, or the will of the 12. And these are 12 men who had a whole host of other things they could be doing. Their will could be saying, you know, maybe you need to go continue being a fisherman, or, you know, a tax collector, or whatever, and yet their wills ultimately came in line with Christ as he sent them out to preach and have authority, that ultimately it is all about God's will that comes, and it comes for our forgiveness, for life and salvation in and through Jesus Christ.
Our guest today, the Reverend Scott Kearns, pastor of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Kansas. Pastor Kearns, thanks for being our guest today, helping us study in Mark chapter 3.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
God bless you and all the saints at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Kansas. On the way, our Monday check-in with our good friend Dr. Bob Weiss of Concordia Seminary. Time for Worldview Watch up next.